It's called the Baja Man. They're from the Bahamas. That's called Back to the Island. The time now is 17 minutes before 6 o'clock. The theme of Nigel Thomas's new book of short stories seems typically Quebecois. The tension between the individual and his rights and the collectivity and its needs. But the sources of Thomas's themes aren't exclusively Quebecois, because he draws heavily on his upbringing on the Caribbean island of St. Vincent. This is the book that's called How Loud Can the Village Cock Crow? Nigel Thomas launched this book yesterday at the library at the Literary and Historical Society in Quebec City. Eric Bertram was there at the Winding.
Was you?
Yes, you was.
I was there. Yes, I was. And well, I got to tell you, it didn't sound anywhere near as funky as that song. It didn't have the groove thing going on, but it was very nice indeed.
And he was being feted by loved ones.
Feted by loved ones. Nigel Thomas is a professor of literature at Laval University. He's also an author, évidemment. But most of the people, though, at the Litton Hist yesterday at the Literary and Historical Society were colleagues of his or students of his, and they were all very glad to be there, and he was very glad to have them.
He's one of these teachers. You hear of them from time to time that people just vie at the beginning of the school year to get a class with.
That was definitely the consensus among the people I talked to there, that he was very much that way. And he's an appealing person. He's an enjoyable person to be around. He told me, or told everybody last night in his thank you speech, that he had to be convinced by one of his students to hold this launch party at all. So his students are actually looking out for him in addition to enjoying taking his classes and reading his works. But there was, it's a couple of dozen people there, so it was quite a good turnout for an English book launch in Quebec City.
Nigel Thomas was in our studio a few years ago. In fact, he made quite a splash with that novel of his called Spirits in the Dark.
Spirits in the Dark. And it was, yes, indeed. It met with some very positive reviews, first of all, which is always a good thing. And it was a finalist for the Q Spell Hugh MacLennan Fiction Award in 1994. So that's a very impressive thing in its own right. His good reviews aside, I actually went to this launching because I was more interested, or as interested, to see what his students were saying. I mean, these are the people that see him up close, and they read him very carefully, and from what I understand, he's not someone that shies away from criticism, so here are the people that are with him all the time, and have looked at his work very carefully, so I thought, why not see what they had to say? And as you said before, he's got this reputation for being well-liked and well-respected, so I circulated, hunted around there, slunk around the room like some kind of carnivorous beast, and hunted down his students and cornered them and asked them questions about what they thought of him as a professor and writer, and here's some of the reactions that I got.
When you read his stories, you get the rhythm of the Caribbean rhythm. In fact, sometimes it can be a little difficult to understand. You've got to reread it. It's almost like poetry. It's like Joël here in Quebec. You've got to listen to it, please, again, and you've got to go over it, and then you get the rhythm, that rhythm happening, and it's almost musical. He's not only an English professor of fiction, but he writes it. You get the perspective of both worlds. See, with English criticism as, say, academic, you usually get the outward towards the inward, creative source. Okay? You get the finished copy, and that works inwards towards what sparked the beginning of that, the writer. Well, from his perspective, you can go the other way, the writer out, and then the final project in. So you get a good developed work, and I think that's what he brings to the department.
Well, only good things could possibly be said about him, especially given that I'm still his student. But even otherwise, the most perhaps wonderful thing about him is that he really is able to trust his students to come up with intelligent things. And it's a wonderful kind of a relationship that he establishes with his students, in which he basically treats us as peers. And even though obviously his field of knowledge is much broader and much deeper than ours, we're still able to feel something like we're colleagues, and that's a wonderful thing. I tend to enjoy Jungian archetypal kind of approach, I think, to literature, and certainly it applies more than anything, I think, to Nigel Thomas's work, and the broad strokes of the symbolism of life and death and spring and winter kinds of things really show up beautifully, and they're very poetic and really inspiring.
Even though that the context is different?
Oh yes, it transcends all of that, and the context certainly is relatively new to me, but is only an enriching project. part of it.
He is definitely someone who makes you think. He's the kind of person who always asks the right questions but doesn't necessarily provide all the answers. So he really gets us thinking. So he's very thought-provoking, definitely. I think that he is really a master of the English language. His technique is very impressive. His books are very tight and very profound. They speak a lot about history, you know, society, economics, race relations, everything. They're absolutely very wonderful, and they're very powerful human studies.
Well, that's quite something to say about one's professor.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. They are a convinced lot, I would say.
Now, the book that we're talking about here, How Loud Can the Village Cock Crow? What is one crowing about in this? What is this book all about?
Well, in order to know what to talk about, what the book is about, it helps to know a little bit about Nigel Thomas. Now, as you mentioned, he is from St. Vincent. He's lived in the province of Quebec for about 30 years now, between Montreal and Quebec City. That means he's been able to get a perspective on his Caribbean heritage. He's gotten a little bit of distance, and not just in terms of time and space, having been away for 30 years and being so far away, but also because it's kind of a sociological distance. You know, he comes from this place where people are very concerned about getting enough to eat and sort of working hard to get their earn their daily bread, and now has been living here for 30 years in this society where people are much more interested in consumer products and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So as for the result of what all that distance and cultural mix is, I thought it would be better if I let him tell you yourself. So I asked him last night at the launching what he thought the hallmark of his work is.
I would say that my work definitely has a specific sociological context. In this particular case, not necessarily for stuff that I publish in the future, the social context is the Caribbean. And unlike, let's say, the novels that were published before, I think I am really focusing on the clash between individualism and communal values. I would argue that really would be the defining characteristic of, let's say, How Loud Can the Village Cock Crow, for example. The second point that I would make is the insistence on the folk tradition. I know it is generally believed that knowledge resides in institutions of higher learning, but somehow I seem to think that those people who are close to the earth know things in intuitive ways. They may not have the vocabulary to express it, but certainly they have the rituals which dramatize it. And I think I try to capture some of that, both in its tragic aspects and sometimes its comic aspects, but also in what I hope, you know, would be its cognitive aspects as well, you know.
Quebec City's Nigel Thomas. And Jackie, we have a treat because people now can hear for themselves and judge for themselves what they think of Nigel Thomas's work. He was in to record this for us, so here he is reading from one of his short stories for us.
The story I'll be reading from is called The Village Ram. It is set around 1965 in a village of 700 on fictional Isabella Island. The protagonist is an English wife, a villager who has returned to the village after living in England for 15 years. The wife's an extroverted, incredibly talented woman who, after an initial stumble, endears herself to the villagers. But there's a problem. Her husband is impotent. While in London, they accommodated this inconvenience well. On Isabella Island, it's quite another matter. I'll be reading the story's conclusion. The houses of the village began on the eastern border of the stream that meandered along the valley floor. They rose with the gentle and finally the not-so-gentle gradient. The less western slope was the beginning of one of the cane fields, now unharvested for 2 years, owned by the regional estate. It was there that pubescent boys and girls went to discover the pleasures and later the barbs of overpowering desire. And were the truth to be told, most of the unwed mothers made these fields beds of conception. One supposes that if there were acts of marital infidelity on the part of the women, they would have been committed here, in the utmost secrecy, for the community ostracized those women who cheapened the marriage vow. They were even harsher with men who copulated with married women. One Sunday afternoon in early February, it must have been around 4:30, for Sunday school had just finished, and I had stayed behind to talk to another of the teachers. A shrill sound vibrated the air across the valley. "Everybody, come quick! Nisa and Lucille doing it in the cane field." Within seconds, every man, woman, and child was running toward the cane field. A red-faced Lucille, her hair straggly but otherwise composed, met us on the way, but Nisa hid for several days. The drama was less intense than I had expected. People showed a great deal of restraint when talking about it. Even Bertha, having had the satisfaction of proving her point, lost interest in the subject. Carnival was not far off. Then the acme of its celebration came on the 2 days before Lent. Among its three most important events was the Calypso contest, first regional and later national. The most interesting of these calypsos treated scandalous episodes that went counter to the community's morals. Most communities had a good steel band and at least one good singer, showman. Thus the calypsonian's wit was most important for winning the prize. We did not know what the Hillsdale Steel Band was working on. Contrary to past years, they chose to remain secretive. Each evening we heard the beating of the pans, but when we attempted to attend the rehearsals of the mighty Whopper, or Calypsonian, we were barred. A rumor began to circulate that the Calypso was about Lucille. The village folk descended on Whopper and made him vow not to make her the subject of his song. Whopper insisted that he too liked Lucille, was touched by the food and clothing she distributed to the community, all the scholarship and ting the children them done win. "No, no," Penderly, moving his right forefinger, "I ain't going to expose she to no ridicule." The night of the contest arrived, and the 16 regional bands and their calypsonians came all primed. There was a crowd of over 20,000. The festivity lasted well into the wee hours of the morning. We from Hillsdale were uneasy. We held our breaths as Hillsdale's turn came round. The Whopper, he was really a Whopper, hurled his 250 pounds onto the scaffolding as the steel pans began slowly, then more assuredly to set the pitch and tempo. He made a few erotic movements with his pelvis and told the crowd, "Ladies and gentlemen, we is about to hear the niftiest calypso ever written. Some people ain't gonna like it, but in my gut, I feel this is the road march. Okay, boys, let's roll." With this, the volume of the bands playing increased to the deft pounding of the players' sticks. Whopper's voice thundered, "I'm not going to sing. If your blade is rusting, your wife can start fussing, and you will lose your pussing." The spectators were hysterical with laughter, their guffaws imitating the waxwane tempo with which the Whopper brought forth his song. When the laughter died down, he resumed, "I know you don't believe me. Nisa the man is he. Village ram for the English dam, she ran with she bloomers in she hand." Explosive laughter, foot thudding. "The boy want milk in his coffee. The boy like white yam. The boy want to change the color he born. He should keep his rudder correction warm. Ain't nothing wrong with sharing. Some call it socializing. Some say Christianizing. Lucy call it funning. Keep the fire burning, keep the rudder warming." The song continued for a while yet, with a rearrangement of the lyrics. Its last stanza sung with a seaward roll, and striking the audience with something of the impact of the nearby billowing detonating Atlantic waves. The volume of the steel band lowered, and the calypso ended. The there was applause for a full 5 minutes. We knew the WOP had won the contest. He would be in the national contest, which would be broadcast island-wide. The Calypso won the regional contest and went on to become the national road march. It thrilled the airwaves throughout the carnival season. WOPA was interviewed on radio. He was vague about the origins of the Calypso. Shortly after the results of the national Calypso competition were announced, Lucille disappeared from the streets. Around 5 a.m. Ash Wednesday, Reverend Bushnell's car stopped at her mother-in-law's gate and drove away shortly afterwards. That was the last we saw of her. A pity. Thereafter, she would have been left alone. She'd already been catalogued. Debo's arthritis worsened. He did not return to England. The WOPA too changed residence. He moved to the capital.
Nigel Thomas.
That was Nigel Thomas reading from How Loud Can the Cock Crow, and the story is called The Village Wren. And it's just one of the stories. And the book is officially launched, so it'll be on sale everywhere.
Great read, eh?
Everywhere good English books are sold.
Yeah, probably Maison Anglaise and Saint-Foy.
Yes.
Nigel Thomas, thank you. Eric Bertram, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And good night. Bye-bye.